And my husband was a cost accountant, payroll accountant, and I was helped with my nurses at the doctor here. Couldn't get around very well. So I did a lot of that.
You were a nurse at the time?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
I've been a nurse for a long time.
Oh, you still are, huh?
Yeah, and I still am. I graduated from Deakin of Spokane.
Oh.
Then I was in the service when I met my first husband. Yeah. And we came right up here because how he came up here was the Fort Lewis team was asked, softball team was asked to challenge the, or whether it was challenged by the minors. And my cousin was the pitcher. So when they got through, they just beat the minors all over the place.
Really?
And so Jack Kirby asked Jim, says, "You want to, when you get out?" And he told him, and he says, "There'll be a job for you."
Mm.
And he says, "I'll take it." He says, "Well, don't you think you better tell your wife first?" He says, "She'll love us too," and I did.
Uh-huh.
And then he went back to college as soon as we left here.
Yeah.
Went to Gonzaga.
Does the village seem to have changed quite a bit since you were here?
Well, this part of it hasn't changed too much. It looks nice. Well, I mean, everything was kept in good repair. They said when the church got it, it wasn't so good, but it was always just kept up, tip-top repair when we were here. Yeah. Come on, Ben.
Thank you. So your name is...
I was Tule Stevens then. I'm Tule Walters now.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Care to express your reactions to your visit to the village?
Oh, I think it's going to be nice. It's really beautiful up here.
Yeah.
I think we're really going to enjoy it.
Enjoy your stay here today?
Yes, I think it's just going to be great.
Is this your first time back since you left?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been back.
Does it seem to have changed quite a lot, or does it look just the same as it always did?
Well, there's a few changes, but, you know, it's recognizable, everything.
Yeah.
You know,
actually,
you don't forget, you know, the buildings and everything, you know, look the same. But, you know, there is improvement. The flowers and things like that are different for sure down here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't used to have flowers here, you know, around these.
Uh-huh. How long were you in the village?
Five years, I think.
Did you live over in the so-called miners' village down the road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lived up there. We lived up on the very last row.
Did you?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Have you been back up there yet?
No, I haven't been back up there.
You think you could find your foundation?
I think I can, uh-huh.
I expect that might be a rather sad trip to
well,
go
we
back
tore
there.
Our house down.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so it really, you know, it won't seem strange in that way, but I think it will be.
You mean when
kind
the mine,
of disappointing, yes.
Yeah, when it closed, you tore it down before you left the village?
And took it. We tore three houses down.
Oh. So you could take the lumber and things out?
Right. Oh. Some of them are used in the house that we have. Yeah.
Where do you live now?
We live at Proctor, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Down the Arkansas. Durfee.
Christine Durfee.
Yeah.
Okay. Any of your children born here, or?
No. No, I had two older ones that were here, and the two younger ones I have were born since we moved to Proctor. But the two old ones. My two older children are—they're married, of course. They aren't with us.
Well, I hope you enjoy your stay today.
Oh, I know we're going to enjoy it. It's really exciting to come back.
Thanks very much.
I can't really think of any.
Yeah. No accidents or.
No.
Or
nothing.
Visitors that stand out in your mind. Someone told me that one of the movie actresses was up here once and gave a performance. I think of her name now. You had a pretty live program here for your off hours, did you, in the center? Or?
Well, we had, of course, we had the movies and the bowling. And I can't really think of anything that, except the, you know, the dancing that we saw. There was some dancers that came up that danced all the different dances of the different nationality of people, you know, Sweden and all those places. I think that's about the only program that I remember that.
to him, and he's telling these gals quite a story.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I understand you're the storyteller of the family.
Well, I don't know about the storyteller.
How does it seem to be back?
Good. Real good. I just wished I could come back to stay.
Well, that would be good for us, too.
If the job was here, I'd stay.
Yeah? You enjoyed your mining days?
You betcha. It's the best job I ever had in my life.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How many years?
I came here in 48 and then went in and out a couple of times and came back in 52 and stayed till it closed.
Hmm.
It's the best job I ever had in my life, and the only thing I liked about it, you got paid for what you done.
Yeah, paid well.
You got... Well, it was hard, but you didn't have much choice.
Did you work in the mine itself?
Yes, I was a blast. Oh, yes, I was a blast hole driller.
Oh, pretty dangerous work, huh?
Oh, not too bad. Not any more dangerous than driving on the highways today.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah, it's not any more dangerous than driving on the highways. It was something you just had to use your common sense to, and not overdo it, you know, not get too brave. One incident happened to me one time in there. I had a young fellow with me working, and we were drilling off. We drilled it out, and we had a bootleg, and we were working down over a stope and about 500 feet of open ground underneath of us. And we just had a little shelf here, and I was cleaning it off. And there was a hole open into the stope out there. And long about noon is when the pressure is the heaviest on the earth, when you get your earth moving. Hmm. I had this young fellow working with me, and I had a safety rope on me. He come down where I was at. We only had about 7 feet of rock under us and 500 feet over the ground. And he come down where I was at, and it kind of made me kind of nervous. The rock was cracking, and I told him, I said, we better get out of here. And he said, what for? And I said, well, I said, these things just don't seem right. He said, why, are you superstitious? And I said, well, at times I guess I do get superstitious. And so he come out the top, and I come out, and he left the tools laying there, and I turned around and sat down, and the ground heaved, and that place where we were standing dropped. He says, how'd you know that was going to happen? I said, I don't know. I just had a feeling it was going to happen.
Wow.
You know that guy turned white as a sheet? I said, no. You see, you was down there with no safety rope, you'd have been down with it.
Yeah.
But I would have hanging out. I had safety rope. I'd have hung. You could have gone out. But he said, he turned white as a sheet. He told me, he said, I'm going to go down on it. But you use common sense.
Yeah.
If you get too nervy, why then you'll get in trouble eventually. But use common sense. Why? Follow your instincts. If you had a feeling things wasn't going right, move out and lay down and rest a while or something.
I suppose there were some pretty serious accidents,
yes,
though, from time
yes,
to time.
And most of them were people that, most of them were serious accidents, one fellow I knew got blew all to pieces, was cutting his fuses too short to save time.
Hmm.
And he cut one too short, and the bomb slid down and blew up. I cut his fuses about 20 seconds when they were set for 3 minutes, you know, and he'd cut them off and save him had to go out and wait for it to go off while he'd cut them, and then slid down the hole, and he thought he'd try to get it back up, and he stayed too long.
Hmm.
And those are usually if a guy got too gritty and too nervy, get in trouble. The majority of the accidents are caused for human cause.
I heard someone was killed by an avalanche that came down this valley over here. Do you know anything about
it? No, it must have happened.
When you went here?
Yes, there was one killed up here about where the powder magazine was, slide come through there. Well, I can't remember what year it was. That's the only one I can remember.
Yeah. Did the miners do much skiing or hiking?
Oh, yes. Yeah, skiing, hunting, fishing. Yeah. Yes, we had a ski tow back up here in the latter years.
Was that up above the miners' village?
Yeah, out there at the end.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I lived on that top row up there.
Oh, yeah.
Was up above there, and we fished all every weekend. We fished.
Where'd you go, on the stream or up?
I fished stream, fished Heart Lake, fished Holden Lake, and fished Dumpty Lake.
Yeah.
The stream we had a flood in 1948 and washed this a lot of this tailings into the stream and a lot of silt stuff in the stream and pretty well killed the stream for a while. But it began to come back about the time the mine closed. And Lake Chelan was in 1948, you'd go out there and just row out a little ways and catch 25, 30 little silver trout, real easy. And then that 48, they had that flood, and silver's gill feed for the first 2 years, and that silt from the washing out of the mountains and some of the tailings, of course, got in there, it killed all the smallest. Mm-hmm. Once for guilty.
That flood come through the valley here?
No, it was snow and then just Chinook wind just now. In fact, I worked down there day and night on that tailings trying to block it to save it from washing and cutting into it. We had a pole riprap along there and then it started to take washing it out. And we worked down there day and night, you know, boulders and cats in there trying to keep it from getting into their tailings. And I suppose it's got into it by now.
Did the stream come up like to the level where you're standing here, or was
No, it never came up. Just because it dropped too fast.
Yeah.
It never came. Now the lower elevation got worse than it did here. You see, because it was lower.
Yeah, spread out more.
Spread out more, and it washed the banks off on the roads down there a lot. And the creek where it comes into Lake Chelan changed streams, changed its course that year. It used to come over here next to Oscar Getty's village there. Along, you see a bank there. The stream used to come in there. And then the boulders and stuff just rolled down that creek and just churned. You could hear them all night long. And then that washed out in the lake and then the stream changed like it is. That happened in 48.
I don't think there's been a serious flood on this river since then,
no,
has there?
No, I don't think so either. We had that big snow that one year. It was 54, 55, I believe it was. We had that big snow and we didn't get any Chinook winds that winter. And it just stacked and stacked and stacked and stacked. And in fact, this building wasn't in use and they come down here and shoveled the peak of it off and put the heat in it so they slide the snow off and blocked it off so they slide the snow off because it began to crack the studding and stuff, began to crack in it. It's got so much weight on it. But any building had any heat on it while that tin roof got warm and the snow kept sliding off. This is one thing you had to watch when it's got a big snowpack on with the heat in there and it starts sliding with the slough off here and just great big piles.
How deep was the snow then? Was it about as tall as this building here? We got,
they kept this plowed out.
Yeah.
But he got 16 foot on the level up there at the house. I had some swing poles out there, the kids 16 foot high, and they covered it up.
Twice the normal amount, I guess.
Yeah, it was 600 and seemed to me like 30 some inches. I had a brother came here from South Dakota. You know, that's a bad winter country as a rule.
Yeah.
He was here that year at Christmas. We had 300 and some inches. He said, boy, don't ever tell me about South Dakota. Of course, back there, if it's snow 2 inches, and it'll all blow for 40 miles and pile up in one place.
What are you doing now, Mr. Durfee?
I'm a fruit processing worker, and I farm.
Down at Prosser?
Prosser, yes. I farm 50 acres and work at fruit processing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I went to work at the food processing plant when I left here.
Mm-hmm.
I went right to work there that fall and been there ever since. Changed hands a couple of times. Kraft Foods owned it for 18 years and I worked for them and then they sold out some local people and still with them.
Yeah, you know the miners' village, of course, has all been raised there. Foundations are left. What was it like when those buildings were all standing there?
Oh, it's beautiful. It was neat. It was neat and clean because every building had to be painted and kept up. It was a regulation. Every building had to be kept up. And every building was modern and well kept. The lawns were well kept. Mowed. Gardens. In fact, I had a nice garden behind my house, strawberry season.
Yeah.
But we found corn wouldn't grow up here because it was too short of corn. Cold and ice. We had a beautiful strawberry bed when we left here.
You haven't been back up there
yet? No, I haven't been back since. It's the first time I've set foot.
Yeah.
I've been threatened to come back in, pack back in the pack there, but I never got to. I got brothers to pack all the time.
Yeah.
Threatened to come back in.
Do some fishing.
Do some fishing and just relax.
Yeah. That spirit or the morale of the village while you were here.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
You had
great.
Good leadership. And
oh, you bet. We had good leadership. We had good cooperation among everybody. If a man got hurt, or there was sickness or anything, everybody was there to help. Of course, we had a hospital here, but it wasn't too well staffed, usually with a intern or something like this, you know, and he could handle some things, but the majority of the doctors wouldn't handle anything serious, and we'd get them out. And we got cooperation from everybody. The last management we had here, the general manager himself, you'd come and tell him you had to get out for an emergency, he'd take you in his own car and run you down and call a plane and run you down.
Call a plane and pick you up down.
Yeah, down at the service. You had to get out for emergency. And even he would come along and people buying the groceries and pick him in the car, drive him home. Of course, you had a guy that would deliver your groceries, companies would deliver your groceries, or you shipped any freight in, they'd pick it up off the dock there.
You didn't have telephone service then either, did you?
We just had phones placed around that area.
Yeah.
You had to go to the operator. to get out. If it's an emergency, why you could always go out. They ship you, send you out on, they put you out on the Forest Service line. And then all the messages had to be relayed down because it went out on the car line. The telephone went on the car line.
Oh.
Except the Forest Service line. And nobody tied that up unless it's an emergency. The telephone was hooked right into power wire. And then they took it off the other end, took it off this end.
Oh, so you could call out.
You could call to Chelan Falls. Lakeside at our office there. We have telephone there. And the main thing has to be relayed from there.
How many hours did you have a pretty good program of?
Oh yeah, they had bowling and all kinds of recreation. Me, I like gardening and hiking and fishing, stuff like that. Mainly what I done was bowling. And they had a gambling hall in the bottom of the recreation hall there. A lot of people gambled. And we had theater, had movies, I think, once a week, twice a week. And of course, television came in. I pretty well put the end of the movies, you know.
Yeah.
We put a booster, had a booster up here, and got a reflection, and had a booster receiver, and then a booster up on the mine dumps, and shot it back into town.
Oh.
Pick up your signal real good. We got Channel 4 out of Spokane.
Hmm. Where was that booster located?
It was on one of the dumps. I don't remember which one it was.
On up the ways?
Yeah, up on the higher dumps. Must have been up on about 1,200, 1,300, 1,100 layers. And we had a receiver up there, and we had, the receiver was up on the top, and then we had an output antenna down below. They couldn't be where they could get reflection from each other, and we just got a reflection in, and then we had electrical wire running up to it, and that reflector reflected out, and we figured out after just a set of rabbit ears. Mm-hmm. But up until then, like you got about 3 or 4 sections.
Yeah. Well, tell me, there's some pretty big rooms in that mountain.
There is,
caverns.
Big holes.
Yeah.
Big holes. That's what I done. I made those holes.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, with blast hole driller. Ring drilled it, blast the ore off. And we worked over the top of the open slopes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's some big holes, and they pumped some of them back full of the tailings, too.
Yeah.
And we had a, I think it was about 52, they had a spill in there, and one of the bulkheads broke loose and filled her about lots of places up with mud, and we had to go in and hand knock it all out. Rewire everything, dry all the motors and all the transformers and everything else, rewire.
Big task, huh?
Quite a job.
Mm-hmm. You know quite a few of the people coming
in?
I remember them.
Yes.
I suppose they've changed a lot.
Yeah, they've changed a lot.
You want to
some
go and meet the bus, or?
I've seen most of the people down there. Now, that one boy just walked through here, was raised up here.
Oh.
Bernie Trainer.
Mm-hmm.
He left here about the time I came here. He's a school teacher in the town where I live. Yeah, I've seen most of these people, seen practically all of them down the other end when I came in.
Oh,
yeah. See, we have a picnic in Chelan every Sunday. Second Sunday in August, and we've been making that. We haven't made the last five, but for several years we made them quite regularly.
I see.
Now there's a man that's on this bus or something else. I know him too. I can't think of his name, but he was one of the last guys to leave here, and he lived in one of these houses here.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm holding the name of the fellow I was talking to there. He used to be an engineer. I think he was pretty well had. No, not Red Bear, but the guy right across from me is from Denver. He came here in 49.
This was the lady of Westville.
He built one of the houses up here, and then he moved into a company house. I think he was engineer or pretty well had control of this thing when they shut her down.
Is that right? Mike Defoe, huh?
Yeah, he's a dark complexion.
He'd be a good person to.
He can pretty well tell you about the tail end of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether he was an engineer or if he had something, head chief engineer or what. I think he might have been chief engineer when they shut her down.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Newman was chief engineer right at the last. Some of the guys left, you know, and then the guy, I can't remember what Mike position he held, but he was pretty well had control of it when they shut her down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming off. He just heard about it late and just drove in there and got right on the bus and on the boat and come right on out. He didn't even know this was coming on.
I'll have to try to get to him.
Yeah, you look for Mike before, he can probably tell you about much from 49 on. There's an old fellow by the name of Archie. Real old fellow there, real peaked face and pretty lank. That was one of the first guys in here, right?
Yeah,
back when they first started in here. And he showed me a picture down there at the dock of some of the old timers when they first set her up. Of course, Nigel Adams' dad was number 10 man here.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Nigel's dad was number 10.
Mm-hmm.
My number is 6087. That was a 6,087th man.
Hmm.
And when I left here, I think they was up to 13,000.
Is that right?
Nigel's dad was number 10. I don't know who number one was. Old Gordon Stewart. Do you know Gordon?
No, I don't. Really.
At Dumpy Lake?
Oh, sure. I've heard
of him. Yeah, he worked here in the early days,
too. Is that right?
Yeah. He was done some of the packing when they come in here when they first started up. He done some of the packing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had the little gasoline Ottaway engine, water cool, that they used to pump the water with. Set in my place just a few years ago, and I gave it to a guy to go and experiment with it.
Is that something?
An old water, you've seen that old water jack?
Yeah,
cool engine.
Sure.
And I had it to my place there. They had completely overhauled it, and they gave it to me when I left here. I don't know if I'd have any use for it on the farm, and I said, well, maybe I will. But I never did use it. But it had a 3B belt pulley on. It's the thing that pumped the water in the early days for the old town.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the post office.
Oh, you were. You were at the post office. And you're still...
Just now, it was Lewis at that time.
Oh, I see. Huh. You were not married while you were here?
Yes, I was.
Lewis.
Mm. He works in the room up there.
Oh.
My husband.
Yeah.
Well, this is a new man.
How does it feel to be back?
Well, I'm trying to get oriented.
Yeah.
It doesn't look quite the same. And I said, I thought they'd added a lot more switchbacks to the hill.
Oh.
I used to drive that, you know.
Oh, did you?
Oh, my. I had a car up here.
Huh?
I drove it. I should say we had a car.
Uh-huh. I guess a couple of cars went off the road, didn't they, in the old days?
These are the original buildings.
I don't remember.
Yes, these are the original buildings. We have built very little new. We kept trying to keep up the buildings.
Is there anything left to this? Other side up here,
What we call the miners' village.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. No, those
have all been
torn down. But of course, you'll see the foundations and some of the other remnants, metal and stuff that they couldn't burn.
Well, I think I'd rather just roam around down here than
go
there and see any foundations.
Well, that's
the
true.
Flowers that you people have planted are still up there,
yeah,
though.
Some of those flowers
look forward
are.
To using those on our tables.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well,
we go out and cut them, and that keeps them blooming.
Yeah.
Thank you.
He's the one to interview. He's been here since 37. We were transferred back to the New York area in 46. And now we live in Golden, Colorado. But a very good friend of mine, I do a lot of volunteer work in the hospital, Bruce Nelson, who says is a Lutheran minister, and he said, you know anything about Holden? I said, truly, we lived there for 8 years at Chisholm and Fusil Thought. And I said, well, I do. So it was a wonderful place to raise our children.
We were quite a settlement up there at Honeymoon Heights when you were there.
I think there were about 14 young engineers. There was an old mining camp up there, and so they let us tear down the old houses up there, such as they were. And we had this skip, and all our groceries would come up on the skip, and we'd all be out every Friday night waiting for those groceries. I can remember this huge, big sack of oatmeal came, and they go, "Would you like oatmeal?" I didn't say a thing, because we both wasn't. But it was very difficult, because we couldn't get any fresh milk and things like that. And we had such this awful powdered milk called Slim. But our grocery bill was about $15 to $20 a month. Can you imagine? Our first bread, which was at 5 cents, and milk, of course, we couldn't get the fresh milk. But eggs, maybe 10 cents a dozen. And of course, we got this huge apple box of pears and peaches and asparagus for 50 cents. 50 cents a box. And now, where we live in Colorado, you get 4 50 cents.
Yeah, about it. What was it like up there on Honeymoon Heights?
Right? Well, my grandfather Duncan, my mother's father, was a mining engineer, one of the first ones in Colorado. And there was a constant rumble above our house there, and he was so afraid that we would really get into an avalanche and wipe us out. But it was only about 50 feet from our little house up there, or this deep gully. And fortunately, we were up there probably two or three years, and we haven't had any trouble, but there was a constant rumble.
What was it caused by, do you know?
Well, snow and ice, and then we'd get a little... But in the moonlight nights were just beautiful. We could look up in the whole valley. And then 7:30 in the morning, I'd be hanging my washing out the coyotes to be pulling on that beautiful Mount Bonanza, you know, mountain of gold. That was beautiful. During the day.
In the winter.
It would look like a pink ice cream cone.
Yeah.
How long have you been here?
Oh, about 3 years.
Oh, you have? Oh, isn't it beautiful? Well, are you here in the winter, too?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh.
Throughout the year.
Well, that's wonderful.
Can I rest this thing by your mouth and hear a little of your story?
Marcus, I just gasped out my last words.
Oh, you can't tell of your whole experiences in 2 minutes, can you?
No, you're just talking about Honeymoon Heights, and I imagine you've already talked to my wife here that came up in 38.
You were there for
the hill.
A couple of years, huh?
We were there for, what, 3 years?
3 years.
Then we moved down to Winston Camp, which is up here beyond us, about a mile.
It's called Winston?
Winston and West Gulf.
Oh.
Yes. And then I guess all the houses are gone there now.
Yes. They
tell me we haven't been up since 40. Well, Claire hadn't been up since 46 when we left. But I left the company in 57. Of course, I would come back and forth where I was transferred to New York from that time.
Were you one of the managers? Or?
I was chief engineer when I left here.
Oh, yeah.
And transferred to New York, and there I became chief engineer for the company over their various mines, which were up in Canada and down in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
But during that period, well, I just come up here a couple times a year.
I see. Just kind of for old time's sake, see your friends? And.
Well, on business until 57 when I left the company.
Mm-hmm.
And then this mine was shut down. When was it? Early 1958, I guess.
I don't know the exact date. Yeah. So you were here quite a few years, huh?
Well, we were here steadily since I was here at 37. I married my wife in 38, and she came up in 38, and we left in 46.
Mm-hmm. You weren't the couple after whom Honeymoon Heights was named.
Yes, there were about a dozen couples that either were just newly married or that were about to be married. And so George Lipsey, who was the manager at that time, said, okay, there's that old mining camp up there on the side of the mountain, those old buildings. He says, you can go up there and you can have those buildings. You can do anything you want with them. So what we did, we went up there and we just knocked them all down and rebuilt little cottages, you see. And so just naturally it became Honeymoon Heights. Or somebody dubbed it that name.
But my husband, the winter he was up here before I came up, spent how many weeks cutting shakes. We had double shakes, so we were warmer than anybody in there.
Oh, that helped a lot to keep the heat in, huh?
You know, some of these big cedar trees down this valley, you know, they're just tremendous trees, and so they were clearing part of it for some of the tanning area here, and so I just take those old cedar trees and cut them into the proper length of lunch, you see. So with the shaking fro, we just split just like perfectly.
Yes, one of us.
And I like the shingles on these buildings. Of course, these are commercial shingles, but the shakes are just as nice and just as.
You wish that somebody had written a book on our very early days up there.
Yeah, I wish that had been done too.
Yeah.
So I guess Nigel Adams has made quite a study of the early days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose if there's anyone that is most expert in that, it's Nigel.
Yeah. Will you be speaking today on the program at all? You do have a planned program.
That's what I
program.
Understand. Nigel said something about to me, but I said, Nigel, you've been working on this. He said, sure.
Who's the man that has composed the song of Bolden? I think he should take that.
Has some what?
He's composed a song about Bolden.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
And I think, Rose, Mr. Rose.
And I was just telling them that it would be neat if somebody here today would take down some of the real life human drama that unfolded here during the years and write it up. So he was just telling a story about this man here ripping the couch on the new.
I helped him load it up. Taking it up the top to take it down, take it up. You know, the hoist man was up the top, and everything level. Up it went, ripped the hole.
Ripped the hole.
Just ripped the corner of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
But brand new.
Only newlyweds, you know, they got the engineering office, the guest house, or they, I mean, not the guest house, the dormitory. They'd renovate them up to live in, you know. Spend $50, something like that, and do nails and work, and they lived in it for a year or two, you know, because there was no housing here. These weren't even built when I came here. and I lived in an old shack up here, construction camp, which is up where the Winston camp would be called, where the home center is built. And that was Honeymoon Heights up there.
Oh, is that? Mr. Soderbergh says that the chalet up here that he lives in has a swimming pool in the backyard that's been filled in. Did you know that?
No, they better excavate that. I didn't know that. I see it.
Heating coils underneath it.
Really? They have a furnace. Well, the house I live in had a barrel furnace, a stove for heating. I think they probably still do this thing. I'm scared of oil, see, so we put in wood furnaces.
Oh,
a lot of them put in wood furnaces.
Cut down many a fruit tree, didn't
you? Yeah, the lady moved out of this house up here. We moved
in. Yeah. I see.
So you lived up there at the top of the hill?
Just down the top. I'm going to go see if I can find it now.
Yeah.
Let's see.
The people that first moved up there started to have children, and they got to be of school age. And the school was down here, so it was pretty much of a, you know, from a danger standpoint.
Yeah.
Had them children down here to school.
Yeah.
So it's a spot fest, of course.
Yeah, they'd have to cross an avalanche area or two coming down, I assume. Yeah, or two just coming down here.
There's avalanche areas right up here on the road, because I used to walk ski patrol in the wintertime.
Did they ever have any avalanches come down?
Oh, yeah, across the road.
You had a ski patrol? Was that like...
No, school patrol. We walked the children to and from school through the slide area.
Oh, yeah.
Slide patrol was what we used to call it.
We were very fortunate all the... during the 20 years of operation, we only lost one man on the slide.
In an avalanche?
Avalanche, yes.
That was right down over here?
No, that was up there. That was up just past the old mine site.
Oh.
It was on that...
old mine road.
Old mine road.
Did they ever have any snow come down over the top of the mine?
That was out of the slide area. That was out of the slide area. The slide area was just west, west of that.
I should learn to stand back.
The mill and mine.
Yeah. And I guess there's a slide area just beyond the trees here.
Another thing, the old camp, what they call the Honeymoon Heights up there, that was in a slide area too. That was later slide.
You do any hiking in those old days?
We've been all over this.
Is that right?
Yeah, up the Holden Lake and Hart Lake, Lyman Lake, and I hunted all around.
You climbed all these peaks around here, did you say?
Pardon?
You've been up on all these peaks around here?
Not up on the peaks, no.
No,
no,
just on
not
the
a peak
ridges.
I stay pretty much to the trails, and but I've fished pretty near all the streams here and lakes and hunted most of the area here.
Oh, yeah.
What job did you have in the mine? And what was your job in the mine?
I started out here as a miner. I first came up as a miner, but I finished up as a shift boss.
Finished up as what?
A shift boss.
Oh.
Yeah.
You worked in the mine then? Or
yes, I worked in the mine all the time I was here.
Yeah.
Worked underground.
What was that like? Is it
the mine?
Was it hard to work inside like that?
No, it's... I'd say underground work was a lot easier than surface work, really.
Right.
You get the textile getting used to it. But once you get more or less climatized to the mine, you get the same weather there year round. And with 40 below zero out there, you got to leave the temperature, you got 100 degrees out here at the same time.
What was the temperature it stayed in the mine?
It stayed right about 60, just about 65 degrees.
Real comfortable?
It was comfortable, right?
Yeah. Didn't have to wear any heavy clothes then.
You did in some areas. If you were in a drafty area, then you'd have to wear, you know, the warmer clothes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wasn't in a drafty area, normally you would just wear ordinary clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you was in a wet area, then you'd have to wear water repellent clothes.
Yeah.
Did they ever have any accidents in the mine?
Yes, a lot of them. Yeah, they've had a lot of fatal accidents in that group. Mining is comparatively dangerous. I don't know how many we've lost up here, how many men with fatally injured in the ground, but there was quite a few.
Now, would they get the ore out by blasting?
Yes, that's the only way to get ore out, And you have to blast it loose from it, original.
Then go in what? Shovel it out?
No, it's mechanical, all mechanical. No, you don't use any shovels. No, if you had to use shovels, you'd never have enough men to get. Now, this mine produced 2,000 tons of ore a day. you had to use a shovel, why, you'd never get 20 tons out of it.
What?
Everything was all done mechanically.
Big scoops?
Big scrapers, and trains to haul it out, and hoist it up to the level, to the level, the haulage level.
What kind of accidents would they have that caused
Most of the accidents that they would be falling material. Falling, either from...
It didn't come down when the...
Yeah, either something coming down on you or falling down into an opening. There were the two of the main...
A lot of tunnels in there. There are a lot of tunnels in there.
Oh, yeah, there's... there must have been... I'd say probably 45 miles of tunnels in there. That's a lot of tunnels.
Oh, yeah, I should say.
I've seen a picture of the ore body, and it's with all the tunnels going into it. Now, were they working several different tunnels in the ore body at one time?
Well, they worked on different levels, off different levels. They take the ore, they extract the ore from one level to the next. You know what I mean? There's always a pillar section in between, they'd leave a pillar section in between the levels. Right?
But they would be working at different levels at the same time?
At the same time, yes.
How would they get it up from the lowest level to the train that would take it?
It was dropped down from the scoops and into what they call a slusher drift, straight into a chute, and pulled out down by gravity. Go down by gravity, see, to a level. Now you load your car from there and haul it down and dump it again. Dump it into a bin, a pocket, what they call an ore pocket. And then they dump it from the ore pocket into skips, into the shaft. And there are about, I think there were about 10-ton skips. And then they'd hoist these skips up the shaft.
And that's just like an elevator.
Right? Same thing as an elevator. Up to what they call a head frame, above the main haulage level. They'd dump it into another ore pocket. They'd dump it out of the skip into this other ore pocket. And then it was pulled out of chutes into the train again and transported out to the mill. Quite an operation.
How long was that train up at the main level?
I think it was about 2,200 feet. Something.
Not quite a half a mile.
About a half a mile. There was a time up here when they worked 7 days a week. And they worked 13 out of 14. And towards the end of the operation, why, they only worked 5 days a week then. They were down 2 days a week.
How much notice did you have before they closed the mine?
About 6 months.
Yeah, they closed it in February.
So a lot of people started to leave there.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, a lot of them left early.
The panic was on then.
Yeah, I suppose.
It had the type of job that... We couldn't leave.
Must have been a hard time, though, for
it was.
For
it was
people.
Hard to adjust. After all, if you lived up in a place like this for, say, 12, 14, 16, 18 years, you know, that's just like moving out of any other home that you've lived in for that many years.
Yeah.
And this was a close community. You really didn't have an awful lot of friends on the outside. All of your friends were here.
Mm-hmm.
Because you spend 11 months and 2 weeks out of every year up here.
How many years did you live here?
My husband came in 39, he came in 37.
So he was here 20 years and you were here 18.
No, I wasn't here quite 20 years. I was, I come up on 37th, September 37th, and left in 45, then I come back in 46. Then I left in 51 again, come back in 53. So I spent about 15 years up here altogether.
Now, what did you do when... Did you have a house down here all the time, and when you leave, you...
No, I sold my house here when I left. I sold my house here and buy another one when I got back.
House for $1,500.
You did.
But they had no value when you left.
No. Just what you could take out of them.
That's the way they like it.
They had a school here, including a high school.
No high school. All high school.
Yeah.
Where did they go?
Most everywhere. So many families sent their children to some other part of the family. Everett, Schwann, Lanty. They were probably spread all over the state. Some of them went to seminary or academies. Annie Wright or something like that. Some of the boys went to military school. I can remember. remember two or three that went away to military school when they went into high school. But no, we had no high school, just through the eighth grade.
Through the eighth grade.
You had two teachers usually, or two rooms?
Well, the last, I guess after 1945 we had two teachers, didn't we? Before that we only had Florence. Yeah, about 1945 I think we got our, something like that. I can't remember the exact year, but we got two teachers then.
Were you part of the Chelan School District then too, as we are now?
Did you raise a family up here?
We were never that fortunate. There was a lot of them.
Yeah. A lot of children around?
Yeah, but this was a young camp. When it opened, it was all young people that came in.
I think there was more wildlife then, deer and bears and stuff like that around?
I don't know. Well, there was a lot of wildlife around. Mm-hmm. You always find it if you went in the hills.
Yeah, like it is today, I suppose.
We saw deer on the road coming up.
Mm-hmm. Seen quite a lot of deer this year.
Oh, has there been?
Yeah. Not often do we see any bear, right?
Oh, they're usually higher anyhow. I don't think you see too many.
Chris said he saw one a couple of weeks ago.
Right?
Down by the chalet.
Oh?
Well, they used to
this is bear country.
Yeah.
I don't just know how the bear population stacks up right now, but
there's
a lot of
bears. And if it was a bad winter, the deer used to like to come in and ruin the garbage. If the winter
yeah, right.
We'll be snow.
Did you have some winters that had hardly any snow?
No, I don't ever remember a winter that we had hardly any snow. Mm-hmm. We were here, we did one winter, you know, we had, what was it, 720 inches?
720 inches.
I have the clippings out of, Life magazine came out and did an article on it, and I still have the clippings on it.
Hmm, that'd be interesting to see.
Uh-huh.
How much snow they had last winter here?
I don't know for sure. Couple hundred inches, I guess, is all.
Well, I don't think they had much. It was so dry everywhere. Yeah. They probably didn't, but that winter we were tunneled in.
A song about Holden by Rattlesnake Charlie Rowe, followed by an interview.
Lake Chelan and the Holden Mine. There's a clear blue lake of water nestled down between two mountain ridges high, where you can see the beautiful reflections of snow-capped peaks and the clear blue sky. It is a playground for the mountain goats, mule deer, cougar, and black bear. You may travel over miles of country, you'll find no place that will compare. Its length is well over 50 miles of rugged cliffs and broken terrain. Many creeks are flowing into it where the snowpacks and glaciers drain. A scenic trip on the lily of the lake, who winds its way through waves that break. Through snow-capped peaks, many people compare with the Swiss Alps and scenes over there. The house sound mine up Railroad Creek, where the old winding road many people seek. The mine is closed, the mill tore down, the Lutheran church now own the town. Many excursions end up there, for hospitality they do their share. It's a wonderful place you ought to see, it'll always linger in your memory. That old gold town, the crimson sun is rising over yonder rain. Buffalo bones lie bleached and gray. This old town lies far and still, where court was mine from yonder hill. The old hitching rail is not there anymore. Stood in front of the old road store. Water falls out there in the street, where guys duck their heads and so does their feet. The boardwalk is gone and the old street light lights things up on a gloomy night. The city now lies on the ground, no more will you hear. Doors are banging to and fro. Whatever the wind, a happens to blow. The mirror is broken, although we hear men are suffering from one another. Two boys that gambled and went broke. Bartenders that listen to a corny joke. In a gals that dance and room that will are planted out there in the woods. Petered out, miners didn't stay. Drought came along, cattlemen moved away. The old drought was that hangman's dream, waiting for pack rats he might see. Behind the law, a coyote stalking a prairie dog. It's the land that dares, and heaven that breathes, for the buffalo, antelope, and Cherokee.
No, I just made a tape of the songs that you did. You say your name is?
Charles Rowe.
And what do they call you?
It's Rattlesnake Charlie.
How in the world did you ever get that name?
Well, that's my CB handle. I couldn't think of anything more ornery than a rattlesnake, and I'm kind of ornery, so that's the reason I got it.
Well, I don't think he's being very ornery. Maybe you were more so when you were up here in the mining days.
Well, no, I got along just fine here in the mining days, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed every minute of it. And I was in the machine shop for the last 7 years. I had my two saddle horses and two burros and went back to the High Lakes and fished and just rode around and enjoyed myself.
So you didn't do much hiking on foot?
No hiking on foot.
Uh-huh. Which back lakes are you referring to?
Well, Lyman and all of the Holden, Lyman and I forget.
Hart,
yeah. Yeah. Then I went clear over the mountain through the pass, too, on the other side.
Past Cloudy Pass?
Yeah, through Cloudy Pass. I used to watch, and then I'd go to the top of the mountains where the mountain goats was, and where I couldn't climb, the horse couldn't make it alone, I'd take a hold of the horse's tail and start him up the mountain and follow him up, clear up above where the mountain goats were.
I think you're kidding me now.
No, I'm not, because one of the guys said to up there, he says, you know, I says, I saw horse tracks up here when I was up there on the mountain goat. He said, no horse could ever make it up there. Mm-hmm. I says, well, one horse did, and that was mine.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't fooled. I had a horse that was sure-footed, and I broke him out up there in these hills.
Is that right?
He could climb anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those were really happy days for you, huh?
Those were really wonderful days.
You liked your work?
I liked my work. I liked everything. Everything was fine up there.
Mm-hmm. Were you married at that time?
Oh, yes. I was married.
Where did you live?
Oh, I lived right up across here in one of the dorms.
Oh.
But we was here when I think it was 55 when we had 642 inches of snow. And that's the only time I ever shoveled snow off on the top of a house and shoveled uphill.
Hmm.
I think he showed some of the pictures of there of where the snow, where you had to count the holes to get into the houses up there. The snow was clear over. They shoveled it up until they couldn't see anymore, and there was just snow covered right over, and then they had to shovel out to this road, and the big cats opened the road up, and they get out, and my daughter had a place up there, and son-in-law.
Mm. And they continued to mine during that heavy winter?
Oh, yes. And nobody ever had a cold up there. Never was, nobody had a cold, but the minute they'd go out to Chelan or Wenatchee or something, they'd come back in with a cold.
What accounts for that, do you think?
The air. I think it was the high, clear air. Mm-hmm. The only thing any of us figure out was just did it. It's the most healthy place that we ever was in.
been some pretty clean living.
That's right. We don't, my wife and I, we don't drink or we don't smoke, and so we just got along. They told us when we come up here in the mining town, they said, you don't drink, you won't get along with anybody.
Hmm.
But we found out we had as many friends, I think, as anybody.
You think the people that came up here were pretty much the same as out there, huh?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was a lot of nice people. There was, of course, you get in a mining town, you get a little roughness, but for the most part, it was a very good bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had any trouble with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, I noticed a bunch of the kids now, they're pretty well grown up. They were little kids like this, and they used to ride my bulls and horses, and they come up here on the boat this time, and they says, you probably don't know us, but we know you.
Yeah,
we used to ride your horses. You.
Hmm.
And then I had a black snake. I made a black snake, a 12-foot black snake, and I taught one of the little kids, 7 years old, how to pop that, crack that, box, that black snake.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought it down to the silk stocking row, they called it up here, and some of those guys, those engineers and the like, they said, oh, if that kid can crack it, I can. So they tried to crack it, and they'd get it around their neck, and it was more fun than a picnic. Those guys couldn't crack that whip without getting it wound around their neck.
Hmm. Quite an art, huh? Quite
yeah.
One of those whips.
It is.
Hmm.
But, of course, I was raised back in Montana, where I had to use them all the time, and there's nothing to it.
Mm-hmm. You know these pretty girls here?
No, well, I've seen them around here since I come with them.
Yeah, maybe they'd like to ask you a question or two.
Okay.
Would you?
Shoot.
A year?
7 years.
7 years.
The last 7 years.
And it's interesting to me that you said your horse could make it up. We have horses, and I know how hard it is for them to climb this kind of steep, rocky kind of terrain. So I'm
well, they would, the horse was raised here, and so he'd go right up over that shale rock, and I couldn't make it a foot, so I'd get off, and it was too hard for him when I was on him. So I'd just get off and start him up, and I'd take a hold of his tail, and he'd go right on up and take me up. Coming down, I didn't ride him either. And one time I fell in the buckbrush, and I was afraid the horse would be right on top of me because he was coming right behind me. But you know, he knew right where I was, although I was right in that buckbrush. He stopped and never touched me.
Mm-hmm.
He'd follow me. I could go. One time I started up this 9-mile hill, I guess, a deer trail, and I was going up, and I come to a Y, but I didn't notice that. I went on over and over the mountain, and I come back, and it was getting dusk. And I, all at once, the horse stopped, and he'd follow me. You know, I didn't lead him or anything, and he stopped, and I went back. I was going to get him licking. I tried to get him to come, and he wouldn't come. So I went back. I was going to get him licking for not following me. Then I happened to notice down there was a Y in the trail, and I noticed his track there. He knew that I was going the wrong direction. I'd ended up in a box canyon way back here if I'd have went on, but he wouldn't go. He knew the right way back.
Mm-hmm.
So a horse sometimes knows more than the guy that owns it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of horses finding their way home in snowstorms and
that's
other
right.
Bad conditions.
And it's like I was raised in Montana. I write most of my, the only songs I can write is about something that I've actually seen.
Mm-hmm.
I write, I've written a good many songs, oh, probably 15 songs or better, and then I sing a lot of the old songs over the radio here in the Chelan for the, I sing it right at home, and it goes right on the telephone and then out over the radio. So I started for the old people. I'd sing the real old songs they knew when I was a kid, and then then I started making some up. But my daughter, granddaughter rather, she says, didn't know the old people that like those old songs. Does the young people like them too?
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't sing, why they want to know if I'm sick or what's the matter.
Mm.
But I'm well. You can see my hand is I got arthritis and one thing or another, so I can't play as good as I used to or
mm-hmm.
sing as good. My voice ain't too hot, but when I listen to some of them on the TVs and stuff, why I decide, well, heck, I guess I can do as good as this one.
Yeah, well, you play the guitar too, then?
Oh yeah.
You've been doing this all your life? Or?
No. I played with a the old Billy Orchestra when I was a kid back in Montana. Hmm. And for a couple of years, at these dances and the like. And then I left, and I didn't have money enough in those days to buy an instrument of my own, so I didn't have any. So I never had an instrument until about 37. I bought an old second-hand guitar for $15, and I tuned it, and then my kids would say on a Thanksgiving or Christmas or something, I'd say, "Daddy, get the guitar. We want to play and we'll sing." So it was all pretty good singers, and so they'd all, we'd sit around and sing songs and the like of that. And so until I retired here about 4 years ago, I heard someone, a lady, singing on the radio, and she didn't have any instruments, she just sang, and she was real old. Still sings once in a while, but very seldom. So I thought, well, I'll try it, and then I didn't tell them who I was at first, and so then somebody recognized my voice, and so then they knew who I was. Then they'd call for me to sing different songs and all that. So I do, if I can find the song, if I have it, or if I sing it for them, or and the like of that.
Oh, that's really great. What did you say you did in the mine when you were up here?
I was a machinist. Oh. I never went inside the mine.
Is that right?
I was going to, but I never got to it. I worked in the machine shop. I was head machinist
there.
Yeah.
On the upper level? Where the,
yeah.
Where the warehouse is?
Yeah, right next to the warehouse, oh. Yeah. Yeah. I think there was 245 steps going up through that mill, as I recall, that we used to walk up every morning when we're going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you raised family up here then?
Well, I had a daughter. I got one granddaughter that was born while I was up here, and she's here today, and the mailman, or the guy that was head of the post office, he's here. And he took a picture of her in a mail sack one time when she was about a year old. And
yeah,
it's the cutest thing. She wasn't a bit bashful, and she'd go around the corner and hi, as she'd say then. He said she was his girl. He called her his girl.
Yeah.
And so this is the first time she's been back here. She didn't remember it. But her mother lived up in the, she lived in the apartments until she had the baby, and then she had to move out, and she moved up in the district, the housing district.
Here, you mean?
Yeah. Then I had a boy come up here and worked in the mill for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shut down for a while, and I told him, I said, "You better hire him back, because I says he isn't going to be out of work very long." And then they called him back. He'd already got a job at the Alcoa down in Wenatchee. So he didn't come back up there. He was working in the mill. I helped him that day.
Did you have any interesting experiences on your hikes? Or run into any bears? Or?
Oh, yes. But I've been around bears and stuff all my life, back in Montana and like, so. And I've been in the wild open places, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of things up here. The one thing that kind of got me one time, went up here in this, what the heck is there, Sarah? What's this club?
Sierra.
They built up at Lyman Lake. They built a. I let them take one of the saddle horses to go up there, but a bunch of them, they put a big camp up there, and they had the guy. I can't think of his name. The guy at the head of the lake, pack all their stuff in the mule trains and stuff, and they had two great big bottles of this gas for the cook with and the like, and they had this big tent, revival tent, like a gathering, and then they all put their little tents up, and they put them right in a nice little level spot, right to the end of every little creek that come down to the lake, and that night they had a cloudburst. And the next day I got up there, and if you think there wasn't a darn looking bunch, they all had to move into the big tent because the water washed right down through all of their tents. You'd think as long as a club like that, there's no better than to build them, put up their tents right in the spot where the creeks come right down in,
mm-hmm.
just before it come into the lake.
Yeah.
But otherwise, everything was okay, and everything went pretty smooth. Oh, I'll tell you one experience. there's some of the guys up here, they made a little home brew and parked them down with my saddle horse one night, and there was two couples, and they had a jug apiece of home brew, and they had a big mug, and there was a feeding, drinking, and letting these burros, they couldn't get their drink clear down, but they'd drink down a ways about half of it. They'd let them drink down about half of it, and then they'd finish it up, and the burros was just about the same condition they was. Then one woman fed all their cigarettes but one to the burros. They like cigarettes. And he says, well, by golly, the burro ain't going to get this one. He stuck the cigarette in his mouth, and he bent over to light the match on the seat of his pants, and the burro reached out and took the cigarette right out of his mouth. But that was more fun to watch them feeding those burros their home brew. And the burros, they'd lay around and bray and just have a wild time.
Were there quite a few burros and horses up here during
the
day?
Oh, no. No, I had the only ones to hear.
No wonder you were so popular with the children and all.
Yeah. Well, I liked the children, and I liked them. It was a real good bunch. But one of them, his folks was going to give him a licking. His mother found a bunch of cigarette butts in his pocket. She came to wash his clothes. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, I feed them to burros. And she thought he was lying. She thought that he was smoking. So she asked me, she says, hey, do they feed those burros cigarettes? And I says, they sure do. She says, well, okay. She says, I was going to give him a licking because I thought he was going to smoke. But otherwise, there was nothing. Oh, yeah. The electrical engineer, he got on one of my burros, and he had, that was when they first got the TV here, and he had a great big tall antenna, and he got on this one burro and to have his picture taken. He had that big tall antenna up there, and all of us, the burro, decided to go up the corral and took off on a run with him with that antenna up in the air. And the antenna hit the ground, and he did too for the first time.
Funny thing to watch. Huh?
Yeah, that was funny. But there was always something to do up here, seemed like something going on.
Yeah.
There was the guys, they put a mouse in my dinner bucket one day, and my wife opened it up, and she wasn't afraid of mouse. She said, look here, where'd you get this? And so she took the butcher knife and killed it. So the next day I got up and said, and I said, well, somebody put that mouse in my dinner bucket. And I said, whoever it was, I find out, I'm going to put in his thermos bottle. And for a week, you'd see those guys put their buckets out on the table and go through their thermos bottles to see if they had a mouse in them. And so someone said, if his wife found a mouse in their thermos, she never would put up a lunch for them again. But there's, you know, there was just always something going on. And
well, I guess there have been a few generations of mice up here because there's still quite a few around.
Yeah,
I
guess so. Yeah. And we used to feed the chipmunks or these little... They're different than the regular chipmunks.
Yeah.
But they'd come right out and the miners would feed them and they'd eat right out of the hand.
Yeah,
and like
they still do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One time there was a bear coming into camp and up above and the dogs took after and she had a couple of cubs and one little cub run up a tree. And the bear won't come back, won't run off, and she never come back after that cub. Somebody come up and got it the next day out of the tree. Oh, there's a fighting little dickhead. Finally he kept it around a couple of days, and then the game department come and got it. It's just like another time, the kids up here, they'd never seen rattlesnakes. There's no rattlers around here. So I told them I used to, when I was a kid, I used to catch those rattlers and get them when they'd strike at you. When they was out, straight out, then you grab them with the tail and just start them swinging and crack their heads off just like you would a black. So they said they hadn't seen one, so we had some down by Manson where I was. So one day I brought one of them up about a couple foot long and in a 2-quart jar. And the kids thought that was the first one they'd ever seen, live one. And they says, well, hey, how about cracking his head off like you said you used to do? And I said, well, I can't. And make a liar out of myself, I better do it, but I'm getting older now. I ain't as fast as I used to be. So I turned him loose, and then when he started off, I grabbed him by the tail. But you know, he wasn't too long, and he pretty near got me before I got him a swinging. Then I popped his head off. Just little things like that. And there was always something going.
Yeah.
And pulling jokes on one another and one thing.
Sounds like you've really enjoyed life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, but I'm old enough now. I'm feeling the last two or three years like I'm going downhill.
Mm.
And I've had my eyes operated on. I had cataracts in them, and one eye went, after they got through operating on, they found it's no good, it's out. So they call me one-eyed Charlie. I think it's better out of me pretty quick.
Mm.
But, I don't know. I'm at 73, I'm in pretty good shape, some of them say, at that.
Yeah. Where do you live?
Not right down here by Manson.
Oh, yeah.
Wapato Lake.
Spent most of your life in this area?
Well, since 45.
Mm-hmm.
We came here in 45.
From where?
We come from Yakima, and then from there I'd come from Montana.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out from Billings, Montana. We lived all over in Montana in different places.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was a stockman, and then drought come along and lost an awful lot of cattle, so we had to be pulled out, and so we come on out to Washington.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you think you'd like to tell us about your mining days?
Not in particular. Mm-hmm. We used to pull jokes on one of the guys. He come down into the shop one day and he got a couple of tires off in one truck. He had a Model A and he put them on his. He was one of the bosses, so he'd get away with it. And while he was out to dinner, I wrote property of Al Sound on his tires. And, oh boy, was he hopping then when he got back up there. He says, if I find out who did that, I'll kill you. He says, if the boss come around the superintendent found out that sign on there, why, he'd be in bed.
Yeah.
there was always something going on like that, you know. Then one of the guys I had another Huntley was a boss and the same guy. And he had this Model A Ford. And the guys, one time he went underground for something or other. And so they put an old top transmission, top off in the transmission. And they put it on, welded in reverse. It was in the winter. They put it back on, and he got ready to go home. He had to back all the way down that hill, then back all the way up to where he lived up in the settlement, then back all the way to work the next morning. And then, well, he had to go underground again. The guy put his own cover back on. He didn't know it, so he tore it all down. He couldn't find anything wrong. But, you know, just different things like that. Oh, then he got some iron and he built him a big bumper for his wraparound bumper for his, he got a pickup thing. And Chevy pickup. he had them make that up out of company time, you know, and company iron. He's putting it on his own pickup. And he had it on all right. And then some of the guys in the warehouse, they went and they put on a stenciled it on there, property of Howe Sound. And one of the guys says, boy, you're going to catch the devil when Huntley comes out and finds that. I says, well, what do you mean? I didn't do it. The heck you didn't. And I said, I went out and I just rode over it with the crayon and oil that we used on the lathe. I wrote, I didn't do it, and I signed my name. And some of the engineers saw me do that. Oh, then what they did, some of these guys come out and they, where I said I didn't do it, they erased the NT off, and I did do it, and I had my name on. And then the engineers caught me erasing it. So they went underground. They told Huntley, I wrote the Scott and he's putting some stuff on his bumper. And then he come out and they found that that's the property house on the bumper. So he thought I did it. And, oh, you know, just, it was always, there was always something there going on. Nothing, you know, mean or nothing, no. You know, just something to keep you occupied. But everybody, all of them was bowling one time, and I don't know, somebody put some oil in the bowling ball, and when he started to throw it slipped out of his fingers and went off down the wrong alley, and he thought I did it, so he put some shellac in the bottom of mine, and I started to bowl, and my fingers stuck to it, and I went halfway down the alley. Then we tell you, like Harry Rinker, he was the timekeeper, and he was a big tall fellow, and he could really bowl. So I'd say when he'd get up, we'd bowl against him, you know, and the office helped, and they could beat us ordinarily. He'd get up there and just, he'd get ready to bowl, you know. I'd say, not too loud, you know. I'd say, watch it. Look at his poise. Boy, and he got a cute poise, you know, and I wouldn't say it very loud, just loud enough so he could hear it. It'd get him rattled, and he couldn't bowl with a darn. We'd beat him every time. But just little things like that, you know, it was one big happy thing.
Well, that's pretty great.
Now, since I've been up here once, I'm going to have to come back up again, you know. I don't know. I just dreaded to come back up and see the place like it, remember it like it used to be, and mm-hmm. It isn't that way anymore. Like in the housing and the lack of that.
And that seems to be true of a lot of miners, that they just didn't want to come back up here.
Yeah, I've talked to several of them. Mm-hmm. I was surprised there was such a bunch come up on the boat. Mm-hmm. They figured there'd only be one boatload.
Yeah.
And here there's two. Well, it's just like this, what the heck is his name that got him together. He used to be just kind of a harum-scarum kid, we thought. Mm-hmm. At the time, didn't figure he'd amount to anything. And now he's a high school professor or something. And
That's Nigel Adams?
Nigel Adams, yeah. Yeah, we know him. And he was just a kid, just kind of a harum-scarum kid. But
yeah.
He turned out fine. You never can tell.
Yeah.
And
might even be some hope for these two young ladies.
Yeah, just like me. When I got married, they only gave me 6 months at the most to be married. And we were putting her our 48th anniversary.
Ooh.
And but because it was a good woman, because if she hadn't been, she wouldn't have left me.